My name is Andreas Hammarskjöld. I'm from Sweden. I founded a company about 2 years ago that's focusing primarily on branch cash. That's why I'm here. That's my Twitter handle. What we're going to learn here today is more or less what is branch cash. Michael Niehaus has covered a little bit on it earlier during the week. We're going to get very deep under the cover. This is not going to be a session where we do pretty little demos and making it all sing and dance. Then you're in the wrong place. But if you really want to learn how it works and some of the caveats and what you can work around, then you're in the right session. So is anyone want to leave? No. Good. So we typically do this little slide. It's just to get a feeling of the audience. Who in here is a technical guy that's kind of wanting to learn about how we can implement or learn more about branch cache? OK. Do we have any marketing mustaches in the room? No. All right. So we're going to try to keep as far as up on the 400, 500 level during this session as possible. If there are things that you don't get, either shout, and we'll try to cover it, or we'll wait to the end. I hope I have enough time to do quite a lot of question and answers. There's a funny quote there in the beginning from the Linux Beard website, which is basically, since 1969, I've never used Microsoft Windows or any Apple products, and I never shaved my beard. So let's start with the basics. What is branch cache? It's pretty simple. First PC or user downloads a copy, then the other people get that copy. Everybody understanding that? But branch cache is actually more, because not only does it do peer-to-peer, it also figures out the differences on the files or any other files that it's going to download and only downloads the delta. And it's not delta per file, it's delta for lots of files. So that can be a bit challenging for the mind, especially if you had a few drinks, how that works. So we're going to try to dig into that as much as we possibly can. But why are we even talking about branch cache? So this is the pretty old Microsoft platform slide that describes how branch cache really works. So you've got the underlying foundation in orange there. And then you've got three different kind of blue bigger boxes, which is the SMB integration, you got the pure HTTP integration, and then you got the bits integration. And Microsoft's been pretty bad at describing the differences between these two and these three and what you can actually do with them. And then in the corner you got the third-party protocols. So branch cache has a full API that you can integrate with and create your own apps and your own transfer mechanisms on top of it. I think I moved out of range. Yes. So if we take that down and let's see, what can we do? So if we open up a Word document over the SMB channel, will that make it go faster? Yes. So branch cache integrates with SMB. You can open your Word document. And if you open up over a bad link or a slow link or even in the main office where the server could be pretty busy, that will go a lot quicker. Other items that you can do, if you just do a straight file copy, that will also go faster. If you do just browsing files in Explorer, will that go faster? No, because that's not using the cache data. But when you transfer a file in Explorer, that will make it go faster. Same goes with any IE. So if you're browsing your SharePoint, that will also make it go faster. Any config manager stuff, majority of that traffic is using bits to transfer. All of that will also go faster. So WSUS and Intune integration, yeah, that's also using bits. So that will also go faster. And I think one of the key one here is that your own app could also go faster if you integrated this with branch cache. Everybody with us so far? Good. So there are a lot of people actually using branch cache, but getting people and big companies to come up and shout their name and put their logo and stuff, as you know, is pretty impossible. But I'm going to share a few slides here of how to use branch cache kind of anonymously. This one is via my son. So this is a customer. He's actually using branch cache. And he points out exactly the two key points why we see branch cache hasn't been implemented within companies. The first one is lack of information. That's currently being fixed. There's much more information within the ecosystem, both from Microsoft and other third parties like ourselves, and tools to manage it. It wasn't until Windows 8 that the PowerShell APIs came. So that was quite a long time. And also, there's much more tools that you can actually use. So what are the customers' experience when they're using this? Well, it's really, really good if you're on Windows 7 on the HTTP side and the bit side. It's not as good on the SMB side. SMB side has got a lot of attention in the 8 and 10 version of branch cache. So that works a lot better. So we'll be covering a little bit of that. But personally, this guy thinks that branch cache requires a lot more focus. And I couldn't agree more. So this is what they did, which is a really cool solution. They basically take all of their branch cache. They're using cached mode in hosted cache mode. But they take all of that data and send it up using OMS. And then they do all of the reporting and the cool stuff to show their management how much data they're saving within OMS itself to kind of get away from this black box that we All right, so that was the kind of the marketing slides. They're done now, so let's dig into the details. There's two versions of branch cache, version 1 and version 2. Windows 7 has version 1. Simple. The server runs two different things. It can run a feature, or it can run a role. The difference is between if you want to do HTTP and bits, you use the feature. If you want to use SMB, you use the role. And both of them, both the client and the server, has a service called branch cache on the actual device itself. It probably won't be enabled unless you're actually configured and going to run with it. So you see the little red things here, which is the CI, content identifiers. That is really the important bit, because that's what branch cache is using to figure out who's going to get what and what's in which file to download. And during the documentation, and even in one of my slides today, there's a mixture of terms. But it all mean the same thing. So if I talk about content identifiers, CIs, IDs, hashes, it's technically more or less the same thing. So keep that in mind. So what is a hash? Well, it's a tiny representation of the original file. And I've kind of visualized it here to the right, how small it is. It's about a 2,000th of the original file. And the nice thing with this is that it's actually a dedupe hash. So for you people that are starting to look at the server 2012 and the dedupe things, that is the same hash that is actually calculating out the files. You don't have to learn that much more about the hashes. We'll be covering a little bit at the end of this presentation how they're internally structured and some of the issues that you might run into due to how they're structured. But you can kind of leave, you don't really have to look at all the hashing algorithms in order to use branch cache. So let's, before we jump into the demo, let's do a little, so everybody's on board, especially those that had a few beers yesterday. We've got two clients. One of them's doing an HTTP connection. He requests the file. Server says, you're not going to get the file. You're going to get the ID. And already here, this is kind of stolen from a Microsoft presentation. They call it ID. It's a CI. It's a content identifier. It's a hash. It's actually a list of hashes packaged together that it sends down. Then, since nobody else has that data, it's going to pull the data down, and it's going to stick it in its own cache. And when the second machine comes around and just same HTTP connection, that will also get the ID. And it will do basically a broadcast to get information, and the other machine luckily will then hopefully respond, and the data will then come directly from the other host. Pretty simple, huh? All right, so let's take a look into dive into look at these hashes and see what they're actually about. So let's go to my server. So I got three machines here, really. I got my Windows 10 machine. Then I got a 2016 server and a Windows 7 client. So now we're on the server itself. When you install Branch Cache, you do that from the via Service Manager. And this might be a little bit small, but this is under the role, and that's not what you want. What you want is the feature, the item under the feature, which is basically down here. And as you can see, I've saved some time, so I actually already installed it. So the only things I added to this server is Branch Cache, and I also added IIS. And the first thing that you're going to do is you're probably going to try to download a file from IIS. And keep in mind, IIS does not like or letting you download things unless you specify the MIME type. A lot of people run into this. So if you add a WIM file to your IIS directory because you're going to test how cool this is, you're trying to download that, IIS is going to say, no, you're not going to download it. So you have to add a MIME type called .wim, and that is in it. But it's all documented, but it's a good caveat. A lot of people run into that. So after that, what do you get? Well, you get a lot of different, you get a PowerShell module, both on the client and on the server. And if I can see my mouse here, you should be able to see that there's quite a lot of different commands that you get to play around with. I'm not going to go into them all in detail, but you get commands like if you want to clear out the cache on the server side, you can do that. And there's other things that you can do. Then there's two other ones that you can run, which is the get data cache and get the actual hash cache. And within the different places, these have different names. But Branch Cache is built around two caches. One is the data cache, also called as the repub cache. That's for data that's going to be republished to other machines. Then you've got the hash cache, which is typically called just the cache, which has the cache of the content identifiers. It's pretty simple how these come into play. The server will only cache the content identifiers, and the clients that pull data from that server will only use the data cache, because that's the actual data that is sharing with other peers. The clients don't really care about the content identifiers themselves. It's thrown away after the download is actually done. Make sense? Yes. So if I'm on my server here, get this, you can see that by default, it's set to 1%. And currently, we don't have anything in the actual cache. So let's go and see if we can create one. We have a little tool, which is built on .NET, that we stole with pride from Microsoft, which basically allows us to download this little content identifier so we can look at it. Because typically, it's designed to be a black box. You're never supposed to see the actual content identifier. And I think that's why people often get a little bit confused as what it is. So if I type in a URL here to my server. If I can spell my start.png and hit execute, you should see it takes a couple of seconds, and then we'll say, yeah, so this didn't work. And why it didn't work is because it's checking the actual hash that it downloaded. So it got a hash, but it's saying that the server returned a different HMAC key. And the HMAC, for those who like encryption, is basically something that's used to sign all of the other stuff, so it's harder to do brute force attacks on them. But if you go to the server, there is an actual PowerShell command that lets you set this. So the value itself is stored in the registry. But if you want to find out what it is, you can actually run a bit of PowerShell to get that key. And in this case, you can see down in the bottom there, my hash is I want more bacon. So if we go back to the hash tool and say, I want more bacon as the actual hash, we click execute again, and you can see, yes, So this tool actually verifies that the hash that we got is correct. And let's see if we save it. Say we want to save it in my current my.ci. And then within the folder itself, we should now have a little file. And as you can see, it's tiny. And if we dig up in, if you use PowerShell to actually, I think I have a little scriptlet here. That'll basically output this hash in binary. So Microsoft has documented this very well. It's all in the developer side of things. But the 00 means it's basically a little Indian format. So the two first bytes, or the first four bytes actually, is showing the version number. So this is a 1.0 hash that I've actually downloaded. Does that make sense? Not really. I think you all had too much to drink last night. But you see, if you turn that around, that would be 1.0. And that correlates to the branch cache version of the hash that I downloaded. So it's pretty straightforward. And that's basically the hash. So when you're doing a real download, that's what the client gets. And that's what you actually then use to query other machines on the subnet if they have any of those hashes that's listed within that file. And it might get answers from tons of different machines and use data from tons of different machines. So that's kind of covered the hash. And why is it important? Because the hash itself, or the CI, that's where the security in branch cache lies. So if you have the CI, you can ask other machines to give you that content. The nice part of that is that that's the only security boundary that there is in branch cache. So you can have workgroup machines, you can have machines running for like Azure Active Directory, et cetera, they can all use branch cache because the secret that the server gives is the key to get the data. And different server can have different keys, but then you can't share the data. So typically in your enterprise, you want your servers to have the same server secret for common types of data that you want to download. Config Manager does this automatically. If you check the little use branch cache on the DP, that syncs the server secret across all of your DPs. So you don't really have to care about it. Another nice thing with the security side of things is data is always transferred encrypted and stored encrypted. It's actually a performance, increased performance by doing it that way because it doesn't have to be ever decrypted. It's only decrypted when you want the file to be created. But if a client comes and asks me, give me some data, I don't have to decrypt it and send it. Or encrypted to send it. I just send the data. All right, so it's secure. Then look at what do we actually have in branch cache in the different. Here's this also where Microsoft marketing has done actually lately a really good job to point out, yes, you can run branch cache if you have pro. So in enterprise, you got all of these different items. But if you kind of switch to Pro, they all more or less go away, except probably the things that you guys are most interested in, which is the Bits integration. So everything that WSUS, SCCM, and Intune uses, you can speed that up using branch cache. Who in here is looking at branch cache for other parts than this? Hello. Few fair hands, like a third almost. All right. So before we dive into the even more of the demos, we're going to do a little bit more technical stuff. So this is kind of how it works. You got a bunch of machines. They all run branch cache. That's the bottom bits on both sides, both server side and client side. Then you got WinInit and WinHTTP. That's two DLLs that exist on the Windows client, responsible for giving content to the majority of the Windows apps, but not always .NET, because .NET also has its own libraries. And then we have IE or Edge, they use WinInet. And then on the other side, you've got IIS and HTTP Sys. So Edge opens up. It says, I want to go somewhere. That gets fed into that DLL. That DLL tells the other server, saying, it adds to the header of the request, saying, I know branch cache. I speak branch cache. Do you? The server will then say, yep, I do, if it's been configured. So instead of IIS returning the data, it actually goes to branch cache, the service on branch cache, and says, hey, this guy is trying to get this data. And if branch cache service doesn't have it, it will then calculate the hash list, which is the CI. And that's what gets returned back to the client. WinInet then says, fine, I got a bit of CI. I'm going to feed that to the branch cache service, who goes out and queries not only its own cache, but also caches on the network for any other machine that has it. That's really how it works. So some help on the way. In Windows 8 and above, you got a good set of PowerShell tools. Allows you to do quite a lot. You can export data from the server, inject that on a client on a USB to make like local, like almost like a pigeon carrying large data loads. You can script a lot of that. You can script the downloads, et cetera. So there's quite a lot of things that you can do. One of the issues has been that it's only on 8 and above. Who in here is running Windows 7 today in their enterprises? Yeah. So that's not really going to help you too much. So that's why we did the branch cache tool, which we released yesterday evening. While all of you are drinking, someone had to do the work. So we released two tools. We released the new updated hash test tool, which is good in some cases. Typically, you won't really need to use it. But in some cases, you wonder, like, what's going on? Especially if you have multiple servers and you want to see that. It's kind of hard to go in and check that they have the same server secret. You can just run this instead. But the branch cache tool gives you complete API coverage of everything that you can do in the branch cache API from a command line, which is a pretty powerful tool. Then we have our reporting executable, which not only can be used to send up nice data to both config manager and standalone, it can also give you a live output. So we're going to demo that in a little bit to see what that actually works. But these tools are tools that we've developed in order to help ourselves when we're almost losing our sanity while playing around with this technology. Because there are a few caveats that you're going to have to be aware of. And let's see if we can run into as many of those as possible. So I'm on my client. I don't have branch cache enabled. So the way to do that, especially if you're on Windows 7, there is a netch alias for branch cache, short for BR is branch cache, where show status all gives you the actual status. You can see service mode is disabled, current status stopped, service type is manual. So if you want to configure it, typically you'd use a GPO or a command line tool to do all of this. But for demo purposes, I'm going to do set service mode equals distributed. And this actually happens quite a lot at customers. So now it tries to set the service, and you can see we get an error. Okay. And then you're like, so I couldn't start the service. What goes on? And you wonder, like, what can I do to figure this out? And if you start it manually, it says go to the event log to find out. And you dig around, and you see here, the branch cache service terminated with the following service specific. The cannot access is used by another process. What do you think file is here? Do you think it is a file? No, but getting there. The kind of the messaging before gives that away. So Branch Cache, of course, needs to use a port to send and retrieve data. Which port do you think they used for that? 80. What else runs on port 80? Lots of things. So if we exit out here and we do netstat AON, that gives us a long list of everything that's basically being used on the system. We can pipe that to find string. I know all you PowerShell people in the room are like, oh, is he using an old command prompt? But I'm an old school kind of guy. So, 5,000, process 5,000. Sadly, there's no real good way of parsing in command shell, so it's better to do that in PowerShell. Yes. So PowerShell is king, we all know it. So process name, which process name uses port 80 on every single modern Windows 10 machine that you published? Skype. IIS uses port 80. Lots of semantic processes uses port 80. Lots of backup tools uses port 80. There's a lot of things using port 80. So don't use port 80 when you're running a branch cache. So I'm going to disconnect my network too here so I don't get too much heckling going on. So after done that, if we go back to Netch, branch cache, set, service mode distributed, done. That's about as hard as it is to implement branch cache. You, of course, need the firewall ports set up. The nice thing when running it in command line is that it does that for you. So you don't. When if you do the GPO way, you also need to put the GPOs for the firewall. If you're using the command line, it'll create local policy for that, but which could be troublesome if you've got other Active Directory policies in place. But with that going, I'm then going to go to PowerShell, and we're going to run a download. How exciting is that? So hopefully, this will fail as well. Actually, I'm not going to do that because I forgot. So let's go to the server. And what we want to do on the server side, what we did earlier, remember I showed you that they got the hash on the CI cache side? And then I used my little tool to download a little IIS start PNG. What that did was that the current active size went up with 1,214 bytes. So it created a little entry in the database for that PNG file. So if I were to download that again, it would just give me that cache straight away. So if I make sure I clear the cache on the server out, empty. Okay? So what we're going to show on the client side is two things. First, we're going to kick off a job using bits. Will you do that? Use PowerShell for that. Then we have a tool which is the bits branch cache reporting tool that you can run. And here, it has a real-time option. But in order to understand what we're actually going to show on the screen, I thought I'd share this first. So it will show the download as it happens real time. And it will show you how much data is coming from branch cache for that specific block. So the width of my command line shell will be the how many basically bits it will chuck the file up into. And then the greener, the better. So light green is above 90% came from branch cache. Gray, there's no branch cache going on at all, and et cetera. Does that make sense? All right. So let's see if we can start a job, capture the data. So in order to do it, I'll type in real time and the name of the actual job. Then I have to be a bit fast here. Okay, so kick that off and kick that off. So now we're actually monitoring this bit job, and It looks like it's going to take a long time. Hopefully, what will happen is that it will go super fast and I will get absolutely nothing into my branch cache. It won't use branch cache because there's no other peer having any data, which makes sense. But I expect all of that data to be injected in my local cache, right? Now, hopefully, if my demo works, none of this data will be in the cache. Judging by the slowness of things, I think it will work just perfectly. So that's going to be maybe if we rerun it again. Hopefully, it should speed up a bit. So here you can see the asterisks basically indicate nothing's coming from the actual branch cache APIs. Everything has to be downloaded using the APIs or directly from the source. So it's chugging along, and it's going a little bit too slow for me. So it means that I'll probably end up, we're going to try to clear out the caches again and rerun it, because I really want to show how it looks when it fails. Basically, what will happen is that the client will go to the server and say, hey, do you have the data for me? And it will say, nope. And then it will go really slow. And now I understand why this actually worked the way it did. So in Windows 7, when a Bits job started to download, it went to the server and said, do you have the hash for me? The server would say, no, I don't. The client would say, OK, bye. That's not very good, because the server's designed to create the hash on the fly. So what the devs did for 8 and above, they implemented a way that the server will basically say, no, I don't, but I'll do it. So you can continue to download a little bit before and wait for me to actually transfer it. That works in 6 out of 10 perfectly. But in some cases, if you don't have a Bits policy, Bits is very, very aggressive at getting data. So it will go full throttle at 1 gigabit. The server has no chance to actually catch up. So this is what happens in mainly all of the labs. You set a Bits job up. You don't have any policy to make Bits go slow. It'll go so fast, the server says, I don't have time to calculate the hash for you. So you download a copy, nothing in the cache. You're like, this is crap. Then you rerun it again. And then you get stuff in the hash, and you don't understand why. Why did this happen? Because then the server in the background has basically figured out what to do. So if I go here, netch br show status all, hopefully, as you can see, it filled up my local cache with more or less the entire file that I wanted to download. So that's really not what I wanted. So let's see if we can break this again. So let's go to the server and clear that out. That's what I want to do. Let's run that again. Look at that. So now you see the speed? It's a completely different animal, isn't it? Now we got kind of at the end, it's slowing down a little bit, so we might expect to have a little bit more data in the actual cache. But this is what 9 out of 10 people run into. They sit in their lab, they don't have any policies, they go full throttle, download all the data, the server didn't have time to calculate the hash, and they say, it's not working at all. Problem is, it's working exactly as it's designed to do. But we have an opening DCR change with the Bits team. So what should happen is that Bits, the server says, tells the client, you wait until I calculate the hash, and you don't download any data until I tell you to. And then the client would wait much longer before it tries to get any data. Still, at that point, if there's no hash, then you might want to skip back. Make sense? So now if I do my netch br show status all, you can see I did grab some, but much, much less, because the server probably had time to catch up. But if it had been a Windows client or Windows 7 client, it would have said absolutely zero, because Windows 7 doesn't behave that way. All right, so if we then switch over to this slide. Mike Lee has mentioned in his session on Wednesday that there's some added telemetry to Windows 10. Windows 7 and 8 saves a ton of data about the actual download and the stats. But in Windows 10, what they did, they added even more. So you can find out, if you're really interested, every single byte which clients it actually got that data from. The problem is that it can get a file could have 1,000 hashes. So it can, a single file download can come from 1,000 different locations. So it's almost, it's like too much data. Because branch cache is very much not like that it goes to one machine. It goes to every single machine and gets the data from all of them. So it spreads the load enormously. But in the event log, you can look at the event 60s, which are individual file downloads, or bits event 4, which is the complete download, will give you all the stats, how much came from branch cache or not. There's a flag there, the peer protocol flag. If that's 0, it didn't even try to do a download. And there are two cases when that will happen. A, the server didn't give you a hash. That makes sense. Or if the file is too small. Branch cache does not typically, in version 1, the server will never generate a hash for you if the file is smaller than 64K. In version 2, which is 8 and server 2012, you can configure that. But typically, we don't recommend something smaller than 32K. It can depend, especially if you want to do SharePoint and you have a lot of small files, depending on your payloads on your SharePoint sites, you might want to lower it even down. But that's a per server setting and not something that the client decides. It's a server decides if it's going to generate content. Make sense? So there's a ton of stats. To the left is all the performance stats from branch cache. It's very simple. They're all in WMI. If you're using Config Manager today, you can all suck them up using just a custom off to get all of that data directly from every individual client, and you can see how much cache is left, how much data have they that each individual client actually saved. So that's all very good technical stuff, but one of the feedbacks we have is when we meet these, say, CIOs, they give us a smile and say, yeah, no, we only do dashboards. So we went ahead and we made a dashboard. So primarily why we did this, because our initial, our own testing, when we were wanting to make branch cache go as good as we, you know, theoretically could, we kind of got boring to collect logs after a while. So we started building up. And we saw, there was a couple of interesting stats that you can see here from the screen. One of them, my favorite ones, is, if I don't know if I can zoom in here. No, I don't think I can. But to the bottom right here, you can see it's a kind of a Gantt one. And branch cache, even though you have all, so these machines were a config manager job that were set to run as soon as possible. And you can see how you updated policy on a bunch of them, but some of them had to wait a little bit to actually kick off the job. But they all waited for each other. It's like it's a friendly little download, you know? They keep in together, and they don't release the content until they see that all the other guys have gotten the content. And when everybody says, yeah, we're done, okay, we're done, and they kind of end at the same time. It's not like one guy says, yeah, I got it all, I'm going to leave. Instead, the bits jobs are waiting for each other. And you can see that very clearly in the second round of files, because the subnet had all the data that was needed to finish very quickly. So typically, what you should have seen that the first machine just got it and finished. But it waited, because it knew it was a branch cache swarm going on, so it waited to complete the bits job until all of the guys were done. So while we're on the issues side of things, other issues are there's no native .NET support. So if you got an in-house .NET app that you'd think, oh, awesome, I could use this, not natively. You have to change and code around that. That is a bit of an issue. We're working to see if we could automatically fix that by patching into the .NET framework to allow apps that are not natively to make them go faster. Other issues, there's no CDN support. So CDN, a content delivery network, it doesn't have any computing power. It's just got disks attached to network, more or less. So there's no IIS server. There's no Windows server on the other end to calculate the hash for us. So workaround is either put something in the middle between you and that content to calculate the hashes. There's a couple of solutions for that. Or put your workload on an IIS in Azure. Encryption and compression. Highly encrypted files don't do dedupe very well. You can still peer-to-peer them, but they don't do dedupe very well. So if you have like a lot of highly compressed files that you expect, oh, I can use dedupe on branch cache to get lots of savings, it doesn't really work that well. And probably what most people, the fear, is that you tell all of your branch cache clients to download the same content at exactly 10 p.m. What's going to happen? They're all going to get the CI, and they're all going to ask, who's got this? And they're all going to say, nobody. And they're all going to say, OK, let's go get it. On a gigabit connection, this never happens, because the first client will get enough data to start answering the other clients. But if you've got a slow link, which is typically one you want to avoid, they're all going to say, what will happen is that nobody will have any data. So they will start downloading the data, the link speed is going to go down, and it'll start, bits jobs start timing out a little bit, and it'll go into wait, and you won't get as good results. Best way to do that is either to deploy to a like test group, or have a collection structure that you distribute to first, or you start using run as soon as possible much more. It doesn't take much more than a couple of seconds for one machine to get a little bit, as long as it has a little bit of data and can reply to those initial queries who's got data, to make all the clients kind of fold into line and to wait, so you get much better performance. Does that make sense? So let's, while we're on the topic of how to do things then, so learn some of the issues. This is what we've seen to help you guys. Start small. Don't enable branch cache on all your machines at the same time and start screaming it's not working. Get one server, one client. That's a good start. Then you scale it up to two clients, three clients, see how it works. Then start doing a proof of concept. Enable a one site in your location and see how it works. Dedupe is key in this, and we'll cover this more and later in the slides. The dedupe hashes that dedupe is using to calculate the storage side of things is the same hashes as configuration manager, as branch cache is using. So on your DPs, if you can configure dedupe for the package storage, dedupe will calculate the hashes for you. So you don't have to care if they've been created or not. That kind of goes with the shake and bake theory. You do make sure you have the server calculated the hashes before you start the download. Otherwise, it will not work. Yes, the server will create the hash as the first client comes in. But what happens if you got like 100 machines coming in at the same time? The server will take a little bit of time to calculate the hashes, especially on Windows 7. Those clients will go, well, nobody has any hashes, so we're not going to use them. So that's a good reason why you want to get off Windows 7 and get to Windows 10. But don't forget that you can use a lot of this. As long as you're aware of the little caveats, you can get enormous performance on the Windows 7 branch cache to get you to Windows 10. And remember, this is actually pretty hard stuff. I spent the 2 years of my time trying to learn all of this that's around branch cache. And there's still times where I'm actually confused. And it's not something that you will basically just get by, like, I'll understand it. Yeah. We've worked with some MVPs that basically say, yeah, I don't have a problem with this. No, you don't need to tell me how it works. I can figure it out. Then they come back and say, I don't understand it. Because it is pretty complex. And the way that the server and client interacts, yeah, it has have, you know, we've been pretty puzzled many, many times. The other best practice is if you look into SMB integration, it's a lot better in version 2. So don't, in limited scenarios, it works well in Windows 7, but try to go to 10 or 8 for get access to that. Probably wouldn't recommend anyone to go to 8 now, but so go to 10 instead. And be brave, ask questions. So, you know, you're not just going to get it. If there is any question that you want to ask, be brave to ask it, you know. We've asked a lot of questions to the product group, and sometimes even they were wrong about this. So there is a new set of guidance that we published yesterday. There was also new guidance from Microsoft. Ours is kind of more hands-on. How do I do this? How do I do that? Meanwhile, the Microsoft one is more, this is what you should use in which scenario. So those are the kind of ones. And with that, we're going to go into the overdrive, and then we're just going to do a little bit of demoing. So V1 hashes. I got a file. We split it up into segments. Each V1 is hard-coded to 64K blocks. Each one of those blocks are then hashed using a 256 algorithm, and 512 of those basically create a 32 meg block. So branch cache is always asking the network, does anyone have a 32 meg block if the file is bigger than 32? If it's smaller, of course, that will be, you know, it'll ask for a smaller amount of data. But if the file is bigger, it will ask for 32 megabyte chunks. So what happens if you inject a single byte at the first or anywhere in that segment hash? It will be different, won't it? So it means that a single addition will make that segment go away. So this is what one of the major improvements they did in V2 is they'll actually look at the file and figure out where's a natural boundary for this file to change in sometimes in the future. It's pretty rocket science. So for instance, if you look at the WIM file has a header with some XML in it saying how many files, how big is the WIM, and how many directories, etc. Do you think V2 is smart enough to figure out that that's, if that changes, what comes directly after it is the same data? Well, we think so. So let's take a look and see what you can do in V2 land. All right, so first of all, these are some of the actual GPOs. So typically, if you want branch cache to go in different versions, or you can either select policy to go only with V1, then the newer machines will talk V1 hashes with your other Windows 7 machines. Not configure means they'll try to use the latest, or you can hard code it to use a specific version. And here are some of the bits policies. I know in Niehaus's session, he wrongly showed out that this is a good policy to change. This is also the policy that the Config Manager team is using. There is a DCR for the Config Manager team. Hopefully the next CB, they've switched this policy around. Because what is it supported on? Do you see? Is it these new cool operating systems that we want to support? No. So don't ever use this policy or show any pictures of it. We want to use the work schedule. We see Windows 7 and above. It has a little checkbox. Ignore bandwidth limits if it's on the same network. That means branch cache will go fast. Okay? So it'll still limit to the server, but any local speed on the same subnet will go really fast. The important thing is if you're in the lab and you're trying this out, if your DP that you're getting the content, or your IIS server that you're getting the content from, is in the same subnet. Is it going to use any bandwidth management? Come on. Wake up. No. This is ignoring it because it's on the same LAN. So you need to go via router if you wanted to actually try this out to have a different subnet. All right. So according to this, I'm on V2. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to do a download of two files. First, I'm going to go to the server, and I'm going to show you another way of actually publishing content. So there are some APIs in the PowerShell command that you can publish content, and that will basically go out and create the hashes for you. And I think, let's see if that works better. So now what I'm telling it is in this WW root, I'm trying to do calculate the hashes for me. And this, you think, would be very, very fast, but it's not. So it can sometimes take a little bit of time. So this should be go up to about 1.2 meg. But I'm going to let the server do it in the background. And in the meantime, I'm going to create a job here. And I'm going to switch to my real-time monitoring. So it's downloading the first file. The second file that it's going to download is a WIM file, just like this one, but I've added like 1 meg or something to that WIM file. So I mounted this WIM, the first WIM, added a bit of data, and saved it as the second WIM. Typically, what you would do in your large WIMs that you want to distribute, typically what you want to do in your boot images that you want to distribute. And we'll see how even a single client, there's no other client on the network that's going to respond. So this is the single client, and it's going to use its own cache to figure out the differences. So if I ran this in V1, what would happen is the first 32 meg block would not go from the cache because the XML is changed in the beginning of the file. Does that make sense? But V2, let's see how well this goes. All right, so the first file is about to be finished. Look at that. You saw it was 99%. So there's a little bit of the XML that it couldn't get. You can see there in this, from the server, it's marked that it got 79K. So it had to go and get that XML change. But more or less, the entirely rest of this file is not transferred from the server. It's just the client that's redoing it, rebuilding that second WIM from its own cache. That's pretty awesome, huh? And before this, there was no real way to visualize this. It was very hard to demonstrate how it's actually working. And now we're getting to the end of the file. It's going to realize, oh, we got a mismatch here. This data doesn't actually correspond. And it's going to go up to the server. And you can see it ramped up to about 1.3 meg that it went from the server. But pretty cool, huh? So what else can you do? Let's see how you're doing on time. We've got 20 minutes left. Some of the things that you can do with the branch cache tool is then you can basically, so we got this little branch cache tool. The screen is probably too big. But what you can do is that allows you to do all of these things, exactly what Bits and the other downloading things does on the back end. So you can create your own CIs from data. You can inject that data into the cache and do lots of other things. So what I'm going to do here is I think I have a copy of, in my little folder here, you can see I got my, if I delete that, that's what I'm going to create. I got my WIM file, the one that I downloaded from the server. Got my tool, and what I'm going to do is that I'm going to generate
thought I had that.
Here we go. So what I'm going to do is going to run the tool, run the command to publish a CI, give it an in data file, and that's going to create the CI for me. And when I have the CI, so I'm just going to paste that in. What it's going to do now is going to create that CI for me. And as you saw, it's a lot quicker when it's actually running in foreground. Then it's super, super fast. The problem with the server side is that running on the servers in the background. But now you can see I got my CI. So for my 340 megabyte WIM, the CI is about roughly 2,000 of that size. So I got my CI. What I'm going to do then is to add that data into my cache. So I'm using the CI, and that basically just published the data into my own branch cache. So if I do netch br show status all, you could see I got some data in there. So if I do netch br flush and run the same command again, see, it takes a bit longer time. I forgot to clear it out last time. Now, it has exactly those bytes in my local cache. It's pretty cool, huh? And then if I want to recreate the file that I've actually added to my data store, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a stream read from my own cache, and I'm going to create a copy of it. So doing a stream read, input file, give it to my CI, output data file, one copy. And there we go. And look at what we had. We got an exact copy of my WIM. It went into my own cache, then went back there. And the nice thing is, if I'm using the same server secret as the server, if I now go to my Windows 10 machine, go to my branch cache here, configure the version support. I'm going to set it to be a V1. I'm going to do a net stop branch cache. So what I'm doing is, on my first machine, I've added a bunch of data to it. And then my second Windows 10 machine, I'm clearing out the cache now. Netch br flush. So I'm flushing the content. And now, if I go back up to the server to get that content, basically what's going to happen is that even the first one is going to come from the actual. All right, so what do you think happened there? Nothing came from branch cache. Why? I've changed the client, the policy to use V1 hashes. The server never calculated any V1 hashes for those images. The hashes are different. So the server said, I don't have any V1 hashes. And the client said, OK, I'm going to start downloading. But it's downloading faster than the server can actually do it. Does that make sense? So this is exactly what I was trying to show in the beginning of the demo. So if we run it again, what you'll probably find is that it will probably get some of the data, but not all of it. And maybe, even maybe, what you'll find is that me on the actual other, no, it's still the same thing. But here you can see the interesting bit. So the reason why we're not getting in data from my Windows 7 machine, I'm pretty sure it's got a different set of server secret. So the hashes don't align. I added lots of data into my hash, but my Windows 10 can't use it because the hashes are wrong. We're going to look into that in a second. But you see the first bit of this did not come from branch cache. This is the second whim, but this is exactly what I said. The XML in the beginning of the second whim is different. So the 32-bit V1 segment hash was invalid, and it dropped that one. But as you can see, even on Windows 1 or Windows 7, the version 1 hashing, is pretty efficient to actually get the data. It's not as good as the version 2. But what happened if you had 100 32 meg files that you're downloading, and they're all slightly different in the beginning? Windows 7 wouldn't get any of those differences. Meanwhile, the V2 one would get more or less all of it. So if you're playing around on the client side of things, check that you got the right hash right. And the hash itself is located at local machine, software, under Microsoft, Windows NT. That's how you can tell whether there's an old school developer or not. The new people put it under Windows. The old people put it under Windows NT. So here on the peer dist, is where all of the stuff is actually. On the security manager, there is a seed. And you can see my actual hash on the version on the Windows 7 client is more bacon, not I want more bacon. The PowerShell commands on the server side when you run to export data doesn't do the same thing as our Power command line tools. It creates an entire database structure, so you can export data from the server, plug it into the client, and you don't have to care about this. That's the nice thing about the PowerShell commandlets. Meanwhile, if you're playing around with the tool, you need to make sure you have the same hash. So I talked about earlier that dedupe is the same thing. And basically, these are the savings that Microsoft released on dedupe from the server side when you on the storage, on your file repository, et cetera. But that's what you're going to transfer, right? So these are the savings you get even before you get to peer-to-peer. Because the clients will see, I already downloaded this. There's no point even to download and to peer-to-peer. I'm just going to skip to the bits that I know are different, and those bits I'm going to peer-to-peer. So you're going to get enormous benefits by using branch cache, especially on application shares. You can see here it's even up to 70 to 80%. But of course, it's not going to be if you do one package, you're not going to save 70 to 80%. But looking over a lifetime of a PC, yeah, you'll probably save a lot of data. So there's a link there for those that want to look more into that. The new stuff that we had in 2016 and Windows 10, we got a whole new telemetry channel, which means there's a lot more in the event log. You can trigger on some of these items. The logging is phenomenal these days. It's basically we asked for a ton of data, and we got bucket loads of data. It's a little bit too much, so you're going to have to traverse it using PowerShell or Excel or something like that. The dynamic cache sizing is also very, very cool. It allows you to set, like, you can set your hard drive to use, or branch cache to use 80% of your disk space, or your actual disk drive. And you're like, well, what happens to this if the user fills it up? So if the user starts filling data up, and the machine goes into the what's called the low disk space mode, branch cache will start clearing out its own data until it's basically out of that state. So if the user starts copying data and it's filling up and goes into the state, branch cache will start clearing out its own cache. So you don't have to worry about, well, what happens if I run out of disk space? Well, branch cache will basically just take all the data away, and you'll end up with an empty cache. But, I mean, that's a different story. So it's very good in that way. Previously, if you said that it was going to be a big cache, it would be a big cache, and it will never back down. So after feedback, they said, no, let's change it to this. It works really, really well. And even if a branch cache client doesn't have any local cache, it doesn't mean that it won't branch cache. It will still try to get peer-to-peer content from other. It just won't be able to save that data to give to other peers. And we get more power on the actual CPU side. There's another slide on that. The dedupe tool, they have a dedupe evaluation tool on server. You can run that on your payloads to figure out how much bandwidth would I save on this payload, because you can basically give it a command line, a folder structure to work against, and it will say this much can be saved. And that's on the storage side, but since the actual hashes and the stuff is the same, you can, you know, it's equals the same how much you will save using branch cache if you were to transfer that same amount of data. All right. It is pretty, had the hash generation side of things, is pretty CPU and disk intensive. It has to go through the entire file. That's why it's been throttled down to not interfere with our active payloads. You can set that these days, so you can give it more. In 2012, it was a single thread operation, which wasn't very good if you had terabytes of data, especially if you added a lot of data at periodic times. With 2016, you can then basically set that, so you can pump it up, which means that in a real-world scenario, you can do terabytes. So it's pretty good. Other caveat is we got some people trying to do doing branch cache over like 38 terabyte volumes and files that's like up to 10 terabyte a piece. Branch cache doesn't do that very well. The reason is that the database itself is, what happens is that you get database fragmentation. So files that are larger than 1 terabyte tend to get fragmentized a little bit. We have only seen a couple of people trying to do that, so we haven't filed the DCR to make it scale a bit better. Is that the kind of payloads you're looking to transfer, or is it more smaller stuff? Smaller? Yeah. So, on contrary belief, branch cache is actually very, very well documented, a little bit too well. It was documented under the API names. Which the marketing team probably never found because they were part of a different division. The problem is it's like a 5,000 pages of documentation. But if you're interested in individual bits, go back to this slide, Google or Bing the actual name, and that is the internal. So branch cache is a completely open API that anyone could figure out exactly how it works. The only thing that's completely patented and hidden away is the version 2 content identifier generation. There's no actual paper on that, how to build that. The second down there is the link to the API on MSDN. And here's some more links for you guys later. We always recommend people to go to our FAQ on our website. This is the same link that was in Michael Nia's session. A lot of the most common questions are answered there, like how do I need enterprise, no, et cetera, et cetera. Also, Microsoft Tech Community, we're on. We're hoping to have a slightly more lively discussion there than you can get on the Microsoft TechNet. We've been answering the TechNet forums now for about a year and a half. So but use any of these channels to get answers to your questions. Also, very active on the MyIT forum emailing lists, so try to push that as well. Otherwise, we got some forums on our website as well. And then we got a couple of 5 minutes before the session ends, so if nobody else has any questions, I'd like to answer my own questions. Do you need enterprise? No. Can you do host deployment? Yes. Can you visualize it? Yes. Can you do cloud content? Nah, you can, but it's a much bigger discussion around how you want to do it. Can I script or code it? Yes. PowerShell, or use our tool if you're on Windows 7. Can you code it? Yes, but you have to do it in C++. If it's very interesting, I'd like to, if there's any developers in here, that I would really like to do a C# DLL, because then you could do also enable that to use with PowerShell to make easy scripting. So one day, when I have a lot of time, I will do that. So if you would like to see more of this kind of sessions at Ignite, you know what you have to do. You have to fill in the eval form and say, go 500. So that was everything for me. Thank you. You've been a great audience. And if there is any questions, please use the mics. I don't know if they turned me off. No, I'm still on.
Hi.
Yep.
Have you got any recommendations if you want to use hosted mode on servers that are already running deduplication?
So the question was, any recommendation on hosted cache already running dedupe? Just make sure that the volumes align. We're basically how it interacts is that I think the VSS dedupe data has to be on the same volume as the actual data that you're accessing. So you have to make sure that you have enough disk space. You can't have your hashes on C and your data on D. That will not work. So you have to align that for it to work.
Okay, so you would configure by policy for all of the branches.
Yeah, you'd have to move. There's a very, very unknown feature. You can use secondary data caches, up to 4 secondary data caches that you could add. So you could add 4 for your other volumes and still keep the one on the C if you wanted to. So if you have multiple volumes, you just add multiple data caches.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there a schedule for the cached content to expire on the clients?
Yes. Windows 7 expires after 28 days. On V2, you can configure that if you want the actual content to expire up to like whatever you want. Okay. A way to get away from that is by touching the fingerprints again. So by using the branch cache tool, basically just creating or querying those hashes, we'll bump them up for another 28 days. So you could have a scheduled task that runs to keep them up to date.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Hi. Just another question regarding one accelerators. Is branch caching somehow interfering with one accelerators like
Yeah, so the question is
Riverbed, etc.
Yeah, WAN accelerator like Riverbed or any other ones, if they interfere? No, not that we've seen at all.
I have one. Primarily, we're a Windows 7 client house, and whenever we get back from the conference, we're going to be deep diving into whether or not we should move into branch cache scenarios for a lot of our sites. The fact that we're still on Windows 7, should I go back and be like, hey, we need to rethink this, or what exactly?
So the question is, should I reconsider if I'm on 7 and wait until they go to 10? Yeah. Are you looking to do SMB?
Well, that's going to be part of the conversation, because we do not have any branch cache, period, whatever, so the entire architecture would be constructed from the ground up.
I would start with Windows 7 as you have today and learn on that. And then as you get more benefits as you move to 10, I wouldn't hold off, because you've got plenty to learn.
Okay.
So the sooner you start, the better it is.
I agree. Okay, thanks.
Hello.
Yep.
Can this help in any way with the downloading of the WSS catalog to clients?
So the question is, can this help on the update of the WSS catalog? Yes. The WSS catalog is a Bits job. So that should be fine.
Because you have when the clients do the initial download, it can be quite large.
Yeah. So are you in Config Manager land or are you in
Config Manager?
Yeah. So the catalog comes from the WSS server. So as long as the WSS server has branch cache enabled on it, that's on the feature side, and your clients are enabled, that will use peer-to-peer using branch cache.
That's good news.
So I noticed you said that it's SMB 2.1. Are you using SMB encryption at all for that in-flight encryption?
So the question was, if SMB 1?
Well, I noticed in the slides it's SMB 2.1, not necessarily SMB 3. Are you using SMB?
No, it's SMB 2.1 and above.
Okay.
So yeah. So
for the in-flight encryption, are you using SMB encryption?
I think,
or are you just relying on the fact that the file themselves is encrypted?
So there's two aspects of it. I mean, SMB itself is encrypted, but the branch cache content is also encrypted on it. So it's kind of both streams are encrypted. So both the getting the file from the server and as well as sharing it with your content. But it's two different encryptions.
Gotcha. Now, the source content on the source server is not encrypted. It gets encrypted as it's getting sent out, right?
No, the server, so the download of the content is never encrypted if the transferring mechanism doesn't encrypt it. Right. So if you're transferring HTTP content from the server, the initial stream of data down will always be open.
Right.
But if you're using HTTPS, it'll be encrypted. If you're using SMB, it will be encrypted.
And not on distributed mode, but hosted mode, can I have it so that the server that's running in hosted mode also stores it unencrypted, or?
Yeah, so all the storage will always be encrypted.
Okay.
So when it's storing it on disk, then it will always be encrypted. So it's just a transfer from the source to your hosted cache or whatever. And hosted cache is kind of different because it's actually the client that tells the hosted cache server to, hey, can you store this data for me? But it hands it over encrypted to it. So the hosted cache server never knows what's in that stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, we're running a config manager with a lot of clients across the country communicating to our DP via IBCM. Are they unaffected by this, or how does that matter?
So what was the question? I didn't really...
So we've got a bunch of clients out across the country. If we turn on branch cache on our DP that they're communicating with,
yep.
They're not going to share, across...
No, so branch cache out of the box is only per subnet. So as long as as long as you don't have one giant subnet, you're going to be okay.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Any other questions? Yeah?
Final question. Can I prevent the dynamic cache sizing to really go to zero so that I really want to keep at least, let's say, 2%, 4%, 3%?
So the question is, can I force the client to have at least a little bit?
Just to prevent,
I don't think so, no.
Just to prevent, if everyone, let's say I have a very small remote office, and everyone is filling up the hard drive, that would break the benefit and the peer-to-peer cache.
Yeah, so the question is then, if I have low disk space on a lot of machines, can I force it? They would still do branch cache, but they wouldn't be able to share with others. But it's still pretty effective, and typically if you're in that mode, you got other issues because you're probably on SSD drives, which will be terribly slow, even slower than a mechanical drive if you fill it up enormously. So then you have, bigger issues.
Yep.
Your users probably will be complaining about speed of average applications more than network speed.
Okay, so is there a way to monitor these things? So you showed something in Perfmon. So that I can monitor these things, so that they can then do something, upgrade hard drives, clean up something on these machines?
Yeah, definitely. So there's many ways that you can monitor. You could trigger on different things in the event log, et cetera, and send stats, or depending on your monitoring solution that you have. You could also capture the data and send it up using Config Manager to then have more of a static, slowly monitoring how is my disk space is actually going as far as the branch cache size is concerned.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Yep.
So our customer uses Riverbed, so that it's branch cache sounds like it might be complementary to maybe on the subnet level, but Riverbed maybe take out the WAN performance.
Yeah. No. So branch cache. So the question is, if I use Riverbed today, will I still get any benefit? Yeah, you'll transfer much less data because you'll only get the deltas of the actual source that you're going to download, even before you're peer-to-peering. So, which means that ultimately your Riverbed will store less of the data that you're actually pulling down. So you get better investment from your Riverbed by using this as well.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.